This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Day before the deadline when they made all those moves and they had to bring everyone back in the locker room for that emotional farewell to four players.
And they didn't yet have Jimmy, but they also didn't have Wiggins and Slow-Mo and Lindy and Schroeder. So they were operating with almost nobody available to them. That was that game, and then the next game in LA against the Lakers, the trade was done, but Jimmy wasn't yet ready to play. He made his debut in the next game in Chicago. But over the last 10 games, every team in the NBA, their last 10 games, where do you think the Warriors rank in terms of, this is a tweet that gets put out every once in a while by Kirk Goldsberry, who does a great job with this. The efficiency landscape. He's got every team plotted on a graph. The x-axis is offensive efficiency, and the y-axis is defensive efficiency.
I love these graphs.
If you're far to the right on offensive efficiency, that's obviously the good side. You want to be on that right side. Far left is bad offense. Far right is good offense. On the y-axis, defensive efficiency, the better defensive efficiency is up high. Bad defensive efficiency is down low.
You want to be in the top right quadrant.
I can tell you the Warriors are in the top right quadrant. Where do you think they are in terms of the net rating, the net efficiency rating over the last 10 games when they rank against everybody else in the NBA? Where do you think they are?
Well, I can't answer unless I get the appropriate game show music because it feels naked without it, Lucas. I know you're doing seven things in there, but yes. Sket-da-da-da. Doesn't it feel better when you get a little sket-da-da-da? Okay, where
so
are
all
they?
15 teams in the NBA, their last 10 games played. Where do the Warriors rank in terms of net efficiency?
I'm going to put them at third behind Cleveland and the surprising Detroit Pistons, both of whom have won 8 in a row.
You are really, really close, but not quite. The Warriors are fourth.
Oh.
The Warriors are fourth in their net efficiency over the last 10. But you got the top two right. Cleveland is number one. Detroit is number two. Yeah. OKC is number three. And then the Warriors slot in at number four. But that's better than the Lakers. That's
better than
the Celtics.
Yeah.
Better than Denver. Better than everybody else in the NBA over the last 10, other than Cleveland, Detroit, and Oklahoma City. That's where the Warriors rank.
Yeah.
They're the number five offense and the number five defense over their last 10 games, Dibs, which translates out to the number four net efficiency rating over the last 10 games.
And I was just looking at the last 10 standings in the NBA standings, and I thought, you know, Cleveland's won 9 of 10, 8 in a row. Detroit's won 8 of 10, 8 in a row.
Yep.
I figured they'd be up there. The interesting part is the Warriors are 7-3, even though they're fourth in overall net efficiency, and that's where you look at, you know, that Dallas game where it's one that kind of got away, the kickball that wasn't called, and you know, then you also lost to the Lakers, if I'm not mistaken. You didn't yet have Jimmy Butler, and then, you know, the Utah loss is, that's one that could come back to haunt you.
It could.
If you wind up a game out of the six, which, again, seems laughable now. We're all doing such recency bias with, you know, they won 7 of 8, and all of a sudden now we're thinking when the parade would be, like what day makes sense. And, you know, a couple weeks ago we were all thinking they might not even make the play-in. I mean, boy, you got San Antonio pre-blood clot. They're a team that we all were.
De'Aaron Fox in town now.
All that.
They're on your heels.
Yeah, but now we're getting greedy, but that Utah one is the one game where I would think, geez, if you fall one game short of something, that's one that could haunt.
Yeah. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube. powered by First NorCal Credit Union for a low-rate auto loan. Apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. I read off that stat to you earlier, Dibs, about the Warriors' record against some really good teams. So you're 2-1 against OKC, you're 2-1 against Memphis, you're 3-1 against Houston, you're 1-1 against Boston. Like, you've beaten some really good teams. You're 1-0 against Milwaukee. I know Giannis didn't play, and there are some other injuries, but the Warriors have also had injuries themselves. You highlighted specifically that Utah loss. They do have, though, in addition to all of those really good wins, they have a plethora of really bad losses, right? You're 1-2 against Sacramento. You're 1-2 against Phoenix. You're 0-1 against the Spurs. You're 2-1 against Utah. That one loss against Utah hurts. You're 0-1 against Brooklyn. You're 0-1 against Toronto. Like, you have some rough losses. So on one hand, you say, well, how can you believe in a team that has those sorts of losses? On the other end, you say, well, look at who they've beaten. They've beaten the best teams. And honestly, Dibs, if the Jimmy Butler acquisition is going to continue down this way, when the Warriors play San Antonio two more times this year, I'd be shocked if they lose those games. When they play Brooklyn on this road trip with Jimmy Butler, I'd be shocked if they lose that game. When they play Toronto again coming up down the stretch, I'd be shocked if they lose that game. Yeah. Like, what the Jimmy Butler acquisition does is he gives you an ability to play your level of basketball, your high level of basketball, just more consistently. Because the Warriors' issue hasn't been that their peak hasn't been good enough. It's been that they've been too inconsistent, and they will beat a good team, and then they'll also lose to a bad team.
And also what you said earlier about slotting, I think, is spot on, where, you know, by having Jimmy Butler come in as your second best player, it moves everyone else down a peg in as far as what they need to do, especially offensively. And that's where it becomes interesting when Kuminga comes back. Where will he slot in when he gets back to full fitness and now he's really ready to go? Does he slot in alongside Moses? Do you just split the minutes at the four with those guys? Does he play his way to where he gets more minutes than Moses? It's also fascinating when you laid that out about their records against the good teams, because last year all I kept talking about was their record against the good teams in the West, and
it was bad.
It was horrendous.
Yeah.
They were
1-3
against Dallas, 0-4 against Denver, 1-3 against the Clippers, 0-3 against Minnesota, 1-3 against OKC. And Phoenix, I mean, for whatever they were last year, they were a playoff team, 1-3 against Phoenix. And so this year, you just ran it all down. It becomes remarkable that they're beating the good teams this year. Now, if they can avoid the hiccups, which they haven't been able to do, losing to Utah and some of the other bad losses, Toronto and whatnot, if you can keep beating the good and avoid spitting the bit against the bad, well, now we can talk about a 5 seed and maybe even beyond.
Beyond?
Well, I mean, the 4 and the 5 right now are the same.
They are.
So,
well, then, hell, you might as well climb all the way up to the 2. There's only a game and a half separating 2 from 5.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm just looking at last year, for example, it was 57, 57, 56, and then 51, 50, 49. That was your top 6 in the West. I don't think that it's going to be that tightly packed this year, but let's just say 50 wins. If you get to 50 wins.
The 18 and 5 in your final 23.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, that's hot.
Yeah.
That's hot. That would mean you were 23-5 in your final 28, which is remarkable. 50 wins probably get you the 4 seed, I would guess. I don't know if you can get much higher than that.
Probably not.
Denver is at 38 wins already. They've got 23 games left. They'd have to go 12-11. 11-12, and you'd go by Denver.
I don't know. You honestly might prefer the 6 versus the 4-5, because at 4-5, you're matched up with OKC in the second round, most likely. And I know there's a lot of Warrior fans out there who aren't that fearful of OKC.
Yeah.
And I kind of get it, but OKC is amazing. They are so, so talented and so deep. And in the playoffs, I mean, their defense, I think they're going to be a real, real tough out. And I would try to avoid them as long as I possibly could. But if it means you get Denver or the Lakers in the first round as the 6 and one of them are the 3, I don't know what I feel like the trade-off is there. If you get up to the 5 and Houston's the 4, I think I'd prefer that. You get up to the 4, Houston's the 5, that would be great. If somehow Houston climbs to the 3, you could be the 6. That might be the dream scenario, because then you might get someone like Memphis or the Lakers in the second round, and that might be the way to go. But I don't know. It's too early to play this game.
It is.
But it does.
But we can do it.
We can do it. It does feel like the dream, though, is find a way to match up with Houston.
Well, I think the dream route, and then we'll go to the phones. I see a bunch of people are on hold waiting to get in here, 888-957-9570. But for me, the dream route would be you get Memphis in the first one. So Memphis falls down to 3. You get 6. You get Memphis. You avoid the OKC half of the bracket. And, you know, then you have to take your chances with either Denver or somehow they get knocked off.
You pray the Rockets upset whoever they play in the 4-5 matchup. Or no, in the 2-7 matchup.
Yeah, the Clippers would probably fall to 7.
You're right.
And so maybe the Clippers somehow get by Denver. I don't know. But for me, first-round opponent would be Memphis or Houston. Those are my preferred above anyone else.
I think above OKC, above Denver, above the Lakers. Yeah. Of the other teams in the top 5, I think you want to play Houston and Memphis before anybody else.
Yep.
I agree. 888-957-9570. Joe wants to weigh in. Joe's in San Jose. What's up, Joe? You're on Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs and Grandy today. How you doing, Joe?
Guys, thanks for taking my call. I saw the game last night. It was a good game. Steph Curry caught on fire. But not every game he's going to catch on fire. And for me, I was hoping Jimmy Butler would have been a little bit more aggressive going down in the stretch, but he kept dishing the ball out to the outside the paint. So my question to you guys is, do you guys disagree or agree that Jimmy Butler shouldn't be taking 3-point shots? That's just not his shot, and I don't know why he's taking it. And do you guys agree that Jimmy Butler should have been a little bit more aggressive down the stretch? Thanks for taking my call. And that's where Kuminga would come in at, to take some of the load off of Jimmy Butler in the paint. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, appreciate the call, Joe. I think you want Jimmy to score as much as possible, but there's going to be games, Dibs, I think especially early, when he continues to try to get into a rhythm offensively where he's just not going to be able to score. First 6 games, he'd scored 17 or more points in all 6. Hasn't been as good the last couple of games offensively. That's going to happen like it happens to anybody. But I think the good thing about Jimmy is that he has the ability to, even when his shot isn't falling, to impact the games in other ways. But his shot is going to get better. Like, as he plays more basketball, he hasn't played a lot this whole season. As he plays more, his shot is going to look better. It looks pretty ugly right now.
Right.
But it's going to improve.
His shot, and you got to shoot your shot. It's all you got.
All you got.
We know that coming up here in about 45 minutes. But his shot is not the 3-pointer. For his career, he takes 2.5 threes a game, and he shoots 33%. So far this year, with the Golden State Warriors, he's shooting 9% from 3.
One of, like, 11?
Yeah, something 12? Like that. One of 11 in the last 5. So, yeah, it's been rough.
He's only made 1, I think, as a Warrior.
Yeah, and, you know, so you don't really want him to shoot the 3, but the way this offense is, there's going to be times when he gets the ball behind the arc, and he's open, and so you got to shoot your shot. It's all you got. We know that, and a shot created must be taken, as another great NBA axiom, so to speak. And you hope that Jimmy can get back to at least 33%, like one of every 3 threes. That would be nice, and that's what he's been for his career. But, you know, so far, it's a little bit tough to watch.
Not only the results are bad, it just looks pretty clunky and not smooth.
Yeah.
It's like, going from watching Steph taking a 3, whether or not it goes in, it's just beautiful and it's pristine and it's smooth and it looks great every time he releases it, to watching Jimmy take a 3 right now. They're on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, Quentin Post, it's like, good looking shot. And, you know, Pod's shot, I think, is improved, and he's, you know, gets the elbow in now and he's starting to get confident from out there. But you didn't bring in Jimmy Butler to add 3-point shooting to this team.
No doubt.
That was not why he was brought in. So you hope that he is able to limit his attempts, but there's going to be times he's going to have to hoist.
He will make a higher percentage in the playoffs than he will in the regular season, too. I will just absolutely guarantee you that.
For his career, he has.
Yeah.
That's a great poll.
Playoff Jimmy, it's real.
34.7 in the playoffs, 32.8 in the regular year.
A couple percentage points higher.
Yep.
We'll take it. And I think we're going to see that as the regular season goes on, we're going to see him get better there, and then he's gonna reach another level in the playoffs. Playoff Jimmy is a real thing. The other point that our caller made, Dibs, and you can join the conversation, 888-957-9570, is about Jonathan Kuminga. When Jonathan Kuminga comes back, what he's going to be able to do offensively. I've said, Dibs, I'm a little concerned about his mindset potentially when he comes back and what role he's being asked to fill when he returns. But there's no doubt, Dibs. I mean, if you can get Kuminga to come in as a super sub off the bench and give you anywhere from like 13 to 17 points on any given night, like, that's going to be gigantic for this Warrior team. And suddenly you have a bench player, a scorer, who you can pair with Steph on that bench group that's out there when Steph is on the floor to begin the second quarter. And suddenly you've got a player that really can help bridge the gap between, you know, a Steph bench group and when Jimmy Butler and Draymond and everybody else come back into the game. So if Kuminga is willing to take on that role, he's going to fit in seamlessly. The question is just how all right is he with maybe that bench role, super sub, come in and get you 12 points?
Yeah, I think he'll be okay with it. And I think a lot of times, many of us, we put thoughts in his head, things that he's never exhibited. He had the one, I guess, comment or somebody from his camp last year that was expressing frustration about his situation and the way it's going here in Golden State, but he hasn't ever really put his words to it, as far as I know, and all the reports you hear from those connected to the team are positive about Jonathan. And I'm looking at his splits right now as a starter this year, 16.8 a game. As a reserve, 16.7 a game.
Huh.
So it's almost dead even. He plays 3 more minutes a game as a starter, and that's only 10 games. He started 10, and he came off the bench for 22. So it's not a completely small sample, but you look at the numbers, and efficiency-wise, he's been as good, if not a little bit better, as a reserve.
I'm going to play you this piece of sound. This was Joe Lacob on the TK show with Tim Kawakami. If you haven't listened to it yet, it came out earlier this week. It's on the free Odyssey app. Just search TK show, and it will pop up there. This was Joe Lacob when Tim Kawakami asked him about his expectations for Jonathan Kuminga's return. Here's Warriors majority owner Joe Lacob.
It's going to take him a little while. I think we have to be fair about this. He's been out 2 months with a significant ankle sprain. But he's going to come back, and my expectation is that he is going to be a phenomenal addition to our team. He represents that sort of power, athleticism, and scoring ability that I don't see how that doesn't help us. We're not the most athletic team in the league. We're really good, but we're not the most athletic team in the league. So I think he coming back is, I mean, if we were going to go to a trade for somebody, I don't think you could find, you know, anybody that might fit in the team construct of what we might need here any better. So I'm very, very optimistic about it. We know what he can do. He's been here. This is his fourth year. We've seen stretches, maybe not starting like on some other teams he would have been starting for 4 years or 3 years. You haven't seen that. He started in stretches. He came off the bench in 30 minutes a game this year for quite a lengthy period and did really well. I'm a huge fan of Jonathan. I think our team is a huge fan of Jonathan. Our prior front office is. Our coaching staff. I mean, I know there's been a lot of stuff about that, but, you know, Steve's a tough mentor, perhaps, but I think he knows what JK can do. He saw it this year. We saw it. I think it's going to be a great fit. I think, you know, in addition, that Jimmy Butler is potentially going to be a great role model, if you want to say. JK came up to me, actually, just in the next couple of days and said to me, I love Jimmy. And he says, I really like that guy. And I don't know. I got a feeling here that this is going to go really well, really, really well.
There's Joe.
Yeah.
He thinks it's going to go well. But I think there's a nugget there buried at the very end. Joe Lacob saying Jonathan Kuminga went up to Joe Lacob and said, I love Jimmy. That sounds like music to the Warriors' ears, because you remember earlier this week, Steve Kerr said pregame, I think it was the game against Charlotte, where he said, I think Jonathan Kuminga can learn a lot from Jimmy Butler, and that's kind of the stuff I want him to learn. Play under control, make the smart move, and don't try to be great. That's why Jimmy is great. He doesn't try to be great. If Jonathan Kuminga is really going to take that to heart, and I think he will. As you said, he's hasn't really given us any reason to believe that he won't. And he takes after Jimmy Butler, then there's no reason to believe that he's not going to have a major positive influence on the team when he comes back.
And I do like what you were saying about him with the second unit with Steph, because you've got somebody then who can play downhill. And we know that Jimmy Butler's going to be in there for the non-Steph minutes. So when Steph is out there in the second quarter, a lot of times it is with the reserves. And if you have Kuminga in there, as Joe Lacob pointed out, we're not the most athletic team. And as he was saying that, I'm thinking about the roster in my head and like Kevon Looney and Buddy Hield and, you know, Draymond Green, unbelievable player, but from a explosive, physical, athletic standpoint, he's an older guy. And Jimmy Butler's he's a good athlete, but he's no longer a high flyer. And so Brandon Podziemski plays closer to the ground. Quentin Post is a stretch five who at 7 feet can dunk. GP2, sneaky good dunker.
Oh, crazy athletic.
But even like...
And at 6'2", yeah. It's
right,
not like,
6'2",
yeah.
And he just goes up and he'll smash on anybody. So, not the most athletic team. Jonathan Kuminga and Dan Devone earlier in the crossover, who's the best athlete here at 95.7 The Game. If you did the same thing for the Warriors, he's probably the best athlete.
Oh, he's winning 100% of the vote there.
Right. If you do like the decathlon, if that was going to be your metric of the 10 events that comprise the decathlon, Kuminga probably is going to win the Golden State Warrior decathlon, I would imagine.
Probably.
I don't know if any of them know how to pole vault, but, you know, you can change that out with something, but he is the athlete that they need. They need his athleticism when he comes back.
Specifically if we're talking about, like, quickness, leaping, jumping, like that kind of athleticism. Definitely no doubt Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you pair that with Steph. I was always concerned with Kuminga, Dibs, before the Jimmy Butler trade and before he got hurt. It seemed like he was having a hard time coexisting alongside Steph, because when Steph's on the floor, the offense is just geared around him, as it should be. It's Steph freaking Curry. Everything's going to be geared around him. But it felt like at times Kuminga was having a difficult time fitting in alongside that and trying to find his spots and not take away from Steph. There was the moment in Minnesota, right, where he took a mid-range jumper early in the shot clock. Steph was on the floor, and Steve Kerr called him out for it post-game, saying, you got to work the ball back to Steph. We got the best shooter ever on the floor. Find a way to get him the ball at least to see if he can get a shot off, and then we can take that mid-range jumper at the end of the shot clock. It will always be there. So I've been concerned about that in the past, but I think before he got hurt, he showed an understanding of how that works. He also showed an ability when Steph wasn't on the floor to be the number one guy and to lead an offense at times when he's the best player on the floor. But as long as he can fit alongside Steph, there's not going to be many problems there. And I think we saw some evidence of him picking up on that before he got hurt.
Absolutely. And I'm just looking at the three-man combinations, according to Basketball Reference, and Jonathan Kuminga's best plus-minus in the three-man combos with Steph and Draymond. Mm. So, and that is the sixth-best trio on the team. And I don't think that Jimmy Butler has played enough to qualify on these lists yet, but the number one three-man is Draymond, Moses Moody, and Pods.
Wow.
In terms of plus-minus, box score plus-minus when those three are together. So you start to think about Draymond and Moody and Pods, and that's three of your starting five. You throw in Jimmy and Steph, and now, last night notwithstanding, you feel like you can avoid having a slow start to a game.
Yeah, and you feel like you have a way to avoid like those major, major runs by opponents where you get outscored like 20-2 over the span of 5 minutes, because you have, at all times, you either have Steph or you have two of Draymond and Jimmy Butler on the floor at all times. And with that group, and you could add Kuminga into it, you're going to have some pretty hefty firepower, maybe sometimes defensively, sometimes offensively on the court at all times, which is really big for the Warriors. I think the other thing, Dibs, and you talked about it a little bit earlier with Quentin Post and with the decision that Steve Kerr made to open up the second half with Quentin Post in the starting lineup last night over Moses Moody. I mean, We are so quick when things go wrong and when there's a decision that was made that maybe we disagree with, that we that we blame a coaching decision or we say, what the hell was he doing? I mean, starting Buddy Hield again, Steve, what are you doing? We're so quick to blame the coach for a decision when, by the way, when a player just plays poorly, like we blame the coach oftentimes. I think we've got to spend a few minutes crediting Steve Kerr for the change that he made last night, Dibs. I mean, the Warriors were dead in the water. It was going to take a Steph miracle to get it done, and I guess it took it anyway. But it doesn't happen without Quentin Post, and Quentin Post doesn't happen without Steve Kerr saying, all right, realizing what went wrong in the first half, let's make an adjustment, and making the right adjustment. Again, I was going to say start Kevon Looney in the second half, not Quentin Post. But Quentin Post scored 10 minutes in the first 3 minutes of the third quarter, helped lead the Warriors back. If it wasn't for him, the Warriors lose, even if Steph gets 60. Warriors don't win without QP last night, and I think Steve Kerr deserves a little bit of credit for the decision that he made to begin that second half last night.
Without a doubt. And, you know, the dirty word we've all been saying for a couple years now, we don't say anymore, rotations. What's up with Steve Kerr's rotations? And I guess it's better for a talk show when they lose because then people can call 888-957-9570 and complain about the rotations. But you're exactly right. He sees something that needs to change, and maybe it's just getting a stretch five out there, and Quentin Post responded. So if Post doesn't go out and play well, then people criticize Kerr, why'd you start Quentin Post? But when Post hits four of the first five shots of the half, Curry hits a three, and then it's Post, 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 and Post. And Orlando has to call timeout.
Yep.
The 11-point game is now a 6-point game. Just like that. Actually, it was 14 at the half.
Yeah.
Curry made it 11, but you go from 14 down to 6 in 3 minutes, all that happened. And it's a timeout and a technical. Curry hits it. Now it's a 5-point game. We got action. So you're right to point out not only Quentin Post, but Steve Kerr for making that change. And, you know, Quentin obviously for responding, because after he did all that, then Curry kind of took over after that.
Yeah, no doubt. And the 925 sums it up well on the text line, and you can join in 888-957-9570. It's fire Kerr in a loss, crickets in a win, and that is the way that this thing works. Someone on our YouTube chat, youtube.com/957thegame, Niners Warriors writes, Grandy, that was two quarters too late. Steph's 56 covered Kerr's blunders. And yeah, I hear you, Niners Warriors. Orlando's a gigantic team, and you knew that coming in, so maybe there's a thought that you start bigger to begin with. And I hear you, but all I will say is that unit, that starting group, had won four games in a row. They were 7-1 in the Jimmy Butler era, and I'm going to tell you, a coach is not going to make a change like that if things are going great. You have to have evidence of something going poorly. Could you imagine what the blowback would be today, Dibs, if, say, the Warriors started Quentin Post or they started Kevon Looney over Moody to begin the game, not at halftime, to begin the game, and it goes terribly wrong. The Warriors fall behind by 20 and they lose the game because they dug themselves a hole early. And the conversation today, Dibs, would be, oh, I can't believe Steve Kerr benched Moses Moody. He's been scoring double figures every single game. They haven't lost. They're 10-0 with him in the starting lineup. How in the world could Steve Kerr bench him? Like, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So I hear you, Niners, Warriors, but the adjustment to be made is one that happens at halftime. That's the earliest it is really actually ever going to happen, and that's exactly when it happened.
And one thing that Mark Willard says a lot, and I'll give him credit knowing he's not listening, that way it doesn't inflate the ego.
I won't tell him, don't worry.
How is Steve Kerr supposed to know who is going to play well when he looks to play them?
And what's supposed to, I mean, that is his job.
But he doesn't know that Draymond Green's going to go 0-for-4 in the first quarter. He doesn't know that Jimmy Butler is going to be somnambulant, which is a synonym for sleepy.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know that going in. You don't know these things, so you try to make adjustments. You go in with a plan, and the plan was Draymond, and then we'll go to Looney. And Loon came in for 5 minutes and had a couple of rebounds, but didn't do much else. And Draymond was a -7. And also, you got to give credit to Orlando. They shot 83% in the first quarter.
That's a bad shooting team, too. 83%.
They were 15 of 18. And
ridiculous.
I mean, Wendell Carter Jr. missed. Wagner missed. and Anthony Black missed, but Banchero was unbelievable. They came out on fire. So, yeah, it's one quarter. You're down 11. You make the adjustment, and the real adjustment came at halftime, and that's why you play four quarters, Grandy.
Where is this here? Hold on. So this was, I forget exactly when in the game this was, but you can go find shot charts on NBA.com, yep. And they update live, so you can find them throughout the game. I found it at this point. This was somewhat early in the second quarter when Orlando was 21 for 28 from the field.
Jeez.
They were 6 of 11 from deep, and they were 12 of 14 from the paint. And there's this one version where you can find like the shots by zone dibs,
yeah.
And it's all green.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll show this on the YouTube chat for those watching on Twitch and YouTube. It is all green for Orlando. I'm not sure how well you can see it.
They shot really well when it's green.
Above league average,
okay.
is when it shows up in the green. They were above league average literally everywhere on the court. And again, you might blame some of that on the players that were out there and not having a lot of height. And yeah, I feel you, and I agree with you. But I don't think it's realistic to expect an adjustment to be made before things start going poorly. Someone else pointed out on YouTube, please don't like pretend that Steve Kerr didn't cost the Warriors games early. And I'm not talking about earlier. I'm just talking about specifically last night. There was an adjustment that needed to be made. Steve Kerr had to pull a string, make a change, and he pulled the right string. He brought in the lefty out of the bullpen, and it worked out. Like, all I'm saying is, in those moments when something needs to change and it does and it works out, he deserves a shout for that.
Yeah, and we can be critical. If they lose, you can always point to the coach and rotations and the rest of it. Ultimately, in this league especially, the players have to go out there and get the job done.
Yeah.
And now if you're going to sit Steph because you don't think that he's a guy who can help you win, now we can be a little bit more critical. But I think since the trade, they now have rotational clarity for the most part. I do think when Kuminga comes back, it gets a little bit muddy again, because you look at last night's game and you played basically 10 guys. And yeah, you can have Gee's minutes and Gee can go join TJD in not playing that much. But you know, you're going to want to, as you get closer to April, you're going to want to pare this thing down to 9 if possible. And so who becomes the odd man out in that spot? Well, it's going to change from night to night.
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, you're not going to get Kevin Knox minutes in the postseason. He very well could be signed to a full-time contract coming up. He's just got signed to a second 10-day. Kuminga's going to take, I would imagine, all of Gee Santos's minutes. He's probably going to eat into some GP2 minutes. I mean, the odd man out might be all of GP2, although he's a favorite of Steve Kerr to throw in there on certain matchups defensively. It might be Buddy Hield if his shot isn't falling.
Well, already his minutes have been pared down. And the other one's Kevon Looney, but he provides so much in the intangibles, yep. And screen setting and defense, and he rebounds a ton. So you can cut his minutes down a little bit, but you got to be careful, and it has to depend on the matchup, who you're playing. And that's where some fans last night, I think, are frustrated early,
yeah.
Because Orlando is so big, and yet you're going with the starting lineup, the regular starting lineup you've been going with now.
Feels like Looney and GP2 are both those matchup guys who they might be out of the rotation against some opponents, but they might factor in pretty big against other ones. 888-957-9570. Let's go out to Dan in Pleasant Hill. Dan, what's up? You're on with Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. How you doing, Dan?
Hey, well, first off, I guess you didn't hear me right. My name's Stan, but no biggie.
Stan, oh, sorry about that, Stan.
Yeah, no worries. I just have one question, and I'm going to take. I'd like to hear your guys' feedback on this. What happened to Trace Jackson Davis? The guy has been out of the rotation completely, and I think the guy earned his minutes by, you know, how he started at the beginning of the year. And the guy definitely has some muscle underneath. Fill the post, shoots the three. I'd like to see a little more muscle out of him. But I can't see why there's no minutes for Trace Jackson Davis. And I'll take you guys' comments off the air. Thanks. Have a good day.
Yeah, appreciate it, Stan.
Thanks, Stan.
Stan.
I said thanks, Dan.
Oh, I heard Dan.
I said Dan, but when you say when you say thanks before it, you could say thanks, Dan, and it sounds like Stan. Unless you say, thanks, Stan.
Thanks, Stan.
Thanks, Dan.
He's not listening. He's okay. Off the air.
Yeah, yeah. He said to take his answer off the air. Yeah,
which you know is my number one.
We'll give
one.
It to him off the air.
It's my Let's number one radio pet peeve. Hey, Stan, I'll go ahead and write you a handwritten note with my response. What are we doing?
So about TJD falling out of the rotation, Stan said that TJD, good player. He said he can shoot the three. On the season, TJD 0-for-1 from downtown.
Yeah.
Not a three-point shooter. He's had some good moments. He's had some good games. He's been good on the boards. One thing that I think has kind of earned him a spot on the bench, and he hasn't been playing in the rotation since the Jimmy Butler acquisition, but he was kind of, his minutes were dwindling even before that. In fact, a decent amount before that. He hasn't played a lot lately.
I put the line at January 22nd against Sacramento. He played almost 24 minutes, and after that, it's been crumbs and DNPs.
Yeah, so not a lot since then. But one thing about Trayce Jackson-Davis is, and I think this is probably one of the main reasons, is he has not been able to finish around the rim with any kind of consistency. I showed you the shot chart, the shot by zones for Orlando.
Yeah.
They did not miss inside the restricted area at that point. And it's obviously you're inside of like 5 feet. Like those are generally going to be high percentage looks. Trayce Jackson-Davis, from an efficiency standpoint, one of the worst efficiency finishers around the rim in the league. And like that's, I'm not exaggerating. And for a guy who's a big, I know he's not as big as some other centers, 6'9" instead of 7 foot or 6'11", you should be finishing at very worst league average around the rim, and he has not been that. So I don't know how you feel, Dibs. I point to specifically how he finished around the rim as maybe reason number one why he's fallen out of favor.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And I'm looking at his numbers this year, and he's shooting 70% at the rim. And I would imagine league average is probably closer to 80 or 85. And even beyond that, it's pretty alarming. Dunks. He's missed 14 dunks, according to Basketball Reference. Which
great.
That's a lot. And layups. He's shooting 39.6% on layups, according to Basketball Reference. So, yeah, when you add in layups and dunks and at the rim, you're only at 70%. I do think that's a big part of it.
I think that, and the Warriors also just kind of have a logjam there. They've also done this thing, which they do this song and dance every year, Dibs, and I get you want to save Draymond as much as you possibly can, but they do this thing where they try to find the best group and who's the best at the five, and then they ultimately always come crawling back to Draymond Green at the five. It should never surprise anybody this time of year comes around or whenever the standings force the Warriors to like put the pedal to the metal, and the standings have forced the Warriors to put the pedal to the metal now. Whenever that time comes, whether it's February or whether it's April or whether it's when the postseason kicks off, they will always go back to O'Reliable, which is Draymond Green at the five, and they have tended to favor both Quentin Post and Kevon Looney. There's just no other room for another big, and Trayce Jackson-Davis is the other big right now.
Yeah, and if you're going to be that other big, then you have to be exceptional at something. And for Quentin Post, that is shooting a three, and you can space the floor with Quentin Post. And if it's rebounding, well, you have to have something else because Kevon Looney is a great rebounder.
Great, yeah.
Like TJD, and Kevon's a better screen setter. And defensively, I would say Kevon's a little bit more reliable. And
Looney also a better passer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to play Draymond exclusively at the five, and they didn't yesterday. They ended up in the second half, the third quarter, as I mentioned, they had
Post,
the whole second half was Kevon and Quentin, so Draymond's able to roam a little bit more defensively.
Yeah, no. Not that Trayce Jackson-Davis doesn't have a future in the league. I mean, from where he was drafted, 57th overall pick last year, he has a future in this league. He just doesn't really have a role on this team right now. We gave some credit to Steve Kerr, Dibs. I also think we got to give some credit to Mike Dunleavy Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, finding Quentin Post, being the guy in charge of getting that dude in here. We mentioned Trayce Jackson-Davis, even though he's out of the rotation now. I mean, pretty good value for a 57th overall pick. Brandon Pajemski as well, considering where he was drafted. a year ago at 19th overall. That's pretty good value. And, I mean, whether or not you could say the Warriors lucked into Jimmy Butler or not, it was also Mike Dunleavy who was the guy who got Jimmy Butler in here, and that's the sole reason why the Warriors have turned this season around.
Yeah, and they also, he gets credit in my book for a sign-and-trade of Clay that got you Melton, that got you Schroeder, and then Schroeder was a part of what got you Butler. So he's been putting in work, and just being able to identify Quentin Post, and I was right, he played 5 years of college basketball.
There you go.
You remember the pandemic they gave guys that extra year. You got the fifth year if you wanted it.
Where was he? He played at two schools.
Mississippi State. And then Boston College. Yeah. And so he ended up playing 124 games in college over five seasons. Played just a little bit as a freshman. Gradually got better. And then last year as a senior, 43% from three. So they identified a big. Everyone's wanted the Warriors to get a big for the better part of this dynastic decade, right? And they've had them.
They might have found one.
They've had Mo Buckets, and they had Bogut, and they had JaVale, and the rest of it. And now they have a real-life stretch five, a kid, a rookie, about to turn 25.
Yeah, that Quentin Post was the 52nd overall pick. And remember, they did the weird thing where they had the 52nd overall pick, and then they traded it to OKC for Lindy Waters, and then they went back, and they bought that pick back. And they used their original pick, which they traded away and then bought back. You could have just traded OKC the money. I don't know why they had to make it separate deals. But they then used that pick on Quentin Post. They got Lindy Waters and Quentin Post essentially for money. And then you mentioned the Schroeder trade, the Melton acquisition, and then the Schroeder trade, who eventually resulted in Jimmy Butler. Lindy Waters is also in the deal. So that maneuvering before the draft last year also a small part in the acquisition of Jimmy Butler, too.
Here's the NBA draft in a nutshell, and I'm looking at Wikipedia for the details. The Warriors used the 52nd pick on Quentin Post, a pick that they got from Milwaukee via Indiana that was traded back to Golden State via Portland.
So what the hell?
I mean, the Warriors got the pick from Milwaukee, who got it from Indiana, and then they traded it, and then they got it back, and it's like, Can we just pick where we are?
Please.
Nearly every pick in the NBA draft is either traded or has been traded.
And that's only going to continue because you have a team in OKC who has every first-round pick for the next 7 years. For the next 7 years. And
wow,
they don't have enough roster spots to make all those picks themselves. So they're going to be trading some first-round picks. That's only going to continue. All right. Time for a break. We got about 10 more minutes, or 15 more minutes once we come back. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you on a Friday. We'll wrap things up when we come back. We're sponsored by the Public Market Emeryville. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7 The Game.
Isn't it kind of expected? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've seen it a lot.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, you kind of like, man, I know this is going to happen. And then when it doesn't, you're like, damn, he only ended with 40. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But like I said, when he gets going like that, it's a big energy boost for everybody in this locker room. And it makes everybody want to be great, especially on the defense side of the floor, so we get the ball back and watch him go do something incredible on the offensive side.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. We got 10 minutes left with you here on Willard and Dibs on a Friday on 95.7 The Game. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. Lucas Alexander behind the glass. He got you covered on Best of the Game coming up next.
I cannot wait to hear it.
I wonder what are we going to hear from, Luke? It was a big day here on 95.7 The Game.
It was a big day as I bucked on the musical. Huh?
There you go. There you go.
Win the big days.
Big day, fun morning show. You're going to hear pretty much an hour of the morning show. Quentin Post, I believe, is going to get us fired off in the 6 o'clock hour.
You believe?
And then Bob Melvin as well.
Oh,
big guest list in the morning
show. Yeah.
I don't know who booked that. It's impressive.
Yeah.
Was it you?
Oh.
I mean,
I got Quentin Post for him.
There you go.
Before practice.
Way to go.
For them?
Only time he could do it.
I heard Quentin Post. Let me go and find it. What exactly did he say? He said, quote, "We're looking to win a championship."
Okay.
"This year," is what Quentin Post said to the guys on the morning show.
Do you have some sound over there from Quentin Post?
I do not have some sound over here from Quentin Post, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I know where you can find it.
the Odyssey app.
Or coming up in 12 minutes.
All right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Grandy.
You're welcome.
How about
I'm
that?
Up what I'm putting down.
I got you. And Bob Melvin, actually, I have some sound from Bob Melvin. You want to hear something from Bob really
quick? I
love
Bo Mel.
Bob talking about how this spring feels different than past springs. Here's Bo Mel.
Everybody was here early in spring training, a little different last year when, you know, Blake signed late and Chappie signed late and really Jorge Soler signed a little bit late. So, you know, it was always we were trying to catch up with the group last year. And this year it's been a much different feel. You know, it's small things like, you know, the first day of, you know, full squad, everybody had a jersey on out there. And they're not required to wear a jersey. We're just working out. And, you know, but everybody wanted to wear that Giants name on the front of the jersey. And it was led by guys like Logan Wedd and Matt Chapman and Adamas and these guys. And, you know, it's just been a really good feeling as a group that feels like it's tight right away. So
there's Bo Mel.
Yeah.
They're proud to be Giants this year. I guess the implication is maybe that wasn't the case the last couple of years.
Well, a little bit uneven in the starts to last year, you know, when Snell came in late and, you know, Chappie came in late. And I think that this group, when you have Buster Posey in and Farhan Zaidi not here anymore, I think that can change a little bit of the tenor in the clubhouse as well. And, you know, Bo Mel is a guy who's probably more comfortable now working with Buster than he was before. And just looking at his place on the all-time wins list, this year he's going to pass 4 guys on the all-time manager list. He'll be in the top 20 at the end of this year.
So, he'll pass that many with what, like 60 or 70 wins?
2 wins to get to Lasorda. 5 wins to get to Fred Clark.
I think he'll get both of those
22
this year.
22 to get to Ralph Houk.
Should get there, too.
53 to get to Mike Socia.
You better hope he'll get there.
130 to get to Buck Showalter.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
And
he set a record, though. You never know.
It could be. Yeah. Right now, he is the third winningest manager to never have won the World Series.
Ah.
Gene Mock. And Buck Showalter, the aforementioned Buck Showalter.
Buck Showalter, who Bob might pass in
2 years.
A year from now.
Yeah, a couple years. But I do like what I've been hearing, although it's the spring, and you know the expression, hope springs eternal.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of what every baseball team is feeling, but I look at the additions and kind of the vibes from afar. Seems like things are going to be better this year than they were last year.
Yeah, I think so, too. Anyways, that's just a taste of Bob Melvin. You can hear that coming up on Best of the Game with our very own Lucas Alexander coming up in the 6 o'clock hour here on 95.7 The Game. We'll go out to the phones in a sec. David, I see you. Hang out right there. But first, it is time for Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society, San Francisco Bay Area. The Warriors made, count them up, 19 threes last night, which means another donation from Pettinelli to the Autism Society, San Francisco Bay Area. Of course, we know it was Steph who made 12 by himself. Did Steph made enough on his own for this donation from Pettinelli.
Which is pretty awesome.
Congrats
I was thinking
to
that
Steph.
Same thing, yeah.
12 of them.
12 of the 19.
And then, let's see, the others came from Pajemski, who made 2. Quentin Post made 2, and then 1 from Draymond, 1 from Moody, and 1 from Buddy Hield. That is the rest of them, but 19 total, 12 from Steph. That is the 36th donation of the season for Triples for Autism. To make a donation to autism yourself or to get involved, go to sfautismsociety.org. That was Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society, San Francisco Bay Area. Pettinelli is here for you, offering financial guidance and support throughout life's milestones. Go to PettinelliFP.com. All right, final call of the day and of the week here on 95.7 The Game. It's David in Concord, who wants to talk about Quentin Post himself. What's up, David? You're on with Dibs and Grandy. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Just you are terrific. I've always suffered from PND. I always thought Porzingis be the perfect fit for the Warriors, the missing link. Somebody big, tall, can shoot the three. But I think we might have grown our own in Post. You put 15 pounds of muscle on Post, and I think he's the answer, the missing link for us. I mean, he's my version of Porzingis.
Wow.
I like it. It is high praise. I mean, the Warriors have been looking for a stretch big for a long time, so much so that they were seemingly in pretty big talks to acquire Vucevic at the trade deadline.
Seemingly, yeah.
Never happened, and maybe it's a good thing it didn't happen. Maybe that's another thing we could give Mike Dunleavy credit for, is not pulling the trigger on that because you got Vucevic at home in Quentin Post.
Right, you got Porzingis, apparently. Quentin Porzingis. Porzingis 7'2", a little bit bigger, and if you could get Quentin Post to become even close to that, well, now all of a sudden we're talking about an elongation of the window.
Oh, yeah. Porzingis, taller, and he's more athletic. He's more athletic, and he's... I mean, Quentin Post, don't get me wrong, Quentin Post has impressed the hell out of me, but Kristaps Porzingis was a unicorn, considered a unicorn for a reason, because he had the unique combination of size and skill as a shooter and as a ball handler and just as an athlete. Quentin Post was, I mean, a late second-round pick for a reason. Not that he can't exceed that. I think he already has, honestly. But these are guys on two different levels. Generally, they do similar things. They're a big who shoots.
Yeah.
But they are a lot. They have differences other than that.
Porzingis is 19.6 a game for his career, which is now coming up on 500 games. Quentin Post is off to a neat little start to his career. And he'll be coming up here on 95.7 The Game, apparently, in about 6 minutes.
Yeah, there we go. QP. QP3.
That's right.
And he does the, I think it's a European thing, the way he celebrates the
International.
Three.
International, yes. Because when you do this, that is considered offensive in many cultures.
Mm.
When you go three fingers, so...
When you do
Index,
middle, and ring.
And ring,
that's offensive in many cultures.
Absolutely. I'm not sure exactly what it means, but I do know that when I started becoming a referee in volleyball, they teach you to use the thumb to indicate the three.
Well, what was it? Which movie was it? Was it Inglourious Basterds? Where they're in the bar and they signal three beers, and they're in Europe fighting World War II, and they signal three. They're pretending to be Germans, I believe, and they hold up the three the American way, the way that we all do it, the way that you just said is offensive, and it immediately tips off Germans in the bar that they are actually Americans and they are posing.
Ooh, yeah.
So, and then stuff goes crazy from there.
Stuff goes crazy, yeah.
I was going to say a different S word, but I can't, of course, say that.
Yeah, in other Mediterranean and Latin countries, the three-finger gesture can be obscene and insulting.
Oh.
And I won't tell you on air what it is implying.
But okay, yeah, please don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all we got time for today, Dibs.
Just don't do it. Yeah.
It was great hanging out with you. I'll do the Willard. You want to do it again tomorrow?
No.
You want to do it again Sunday?
I'm busy.
You want to do it on Monday?
Sure.
Okay.
But at Chase Center.
Oh, that's true, because we've got...
You're going to get knocked out. You're going to get knocked out. You're going first.
I'll go first. I'll take the challenge.
You don't want the smoke.
Knockout coming up on Monday.
Mark Grandy's been eliminated.
You can watch it. Yeah, you'll be on the play-by-play. You can describe it if you want.
I can't wait. Yeah.
That should be a lot of fun. That's coming up on Monday. You can watch it on our YouTube channel on Monday, the knockout tournament itself. YouTube.com/957. The game should be a ton of fun. All right, Dibs. That was a lot of fun. A pleasure being with you, as always. Shout out as well to Steven Rizzotto and Lucas Alexander behind the glass. I know Lucas has got a fun hour planned for you coming up. My name is Mark Randy, signing off. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk next time on 95.7 The Game. Best of The Game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. We'll talk later on 95.7 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.